WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. A day after President Trump threatened his political future for voting against the big, beautiful budget bill, North Carolina Republican Tom Tillis says he won't run for another Senate term next year. Here's correspondent Nicole Killian.
Senator Tillis has been warning his colleagues repeatedly about moving forward with some of these proposed Medicaid cuts, but many of the things that he objects to remain in this package, which is why he has said that he cannot vote for it.
In a series of social media post, Trump threatened to support Tillis's primary opponent, University of Virginia politics professor Larry Sabato.
Tillis has had it. This has happened before. You either agree with Trump and go along with what he wants, and you do so enthusiastically, or you become the enemy.
As for the bill itself, the Senate has started to debate after clerks finished reading the 940-page bill that took just under 16 hours. Majority Leader John Thune.
I would like to start by just taking a moment to thank the clerks who stayed up all night reading the amendment and getting us this point.
The Senate could vote tomorrow. Texas Republican Congressman Michael McCaul tells CBS's Face the Nation he's ready to vote for the bill when it goes back to the House.
What I'm voting for is a border security measure, $80 billion, $12 billion to reimburse states like mine. I'm voting for $150 billion that will go to our Department of Defense and then the tax cut. For those three reasons, I'm a yes.
President Trump says he doesn't think he'll need to extend the tariff pauses, but he also says he won't be able to personally negotiate with all of the U.S.'s trading partners.
Send him a letter, a very fair letter, saying, congratulations, we're going to allow you to trade in the United States of America. You're going to pay a 25% tariff or 20% or 40 or 50%.
Trump appearing on Fox News Futures and on the same broadcast, he still claims that U.S. bombers obliterated Iran's nuclear program last week, although many experts disagree with the assessment and say the jury is still out. CBS's Linda Kenyon.
The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency says the U.S. airstrikes did cause severe damage, but did not completely end Iran's nuclear ambitions.
The knowledge is there. The industrial capacity is there.
On CBS's Face the Nation, Rafael Grossi also says diplomacy is the only true way to end the conflict.
You are not going to solve this in a definitive way militarily.
Adding diplomacy plus an inspection system in the future will reassure the entire world about the end of the nuclear threat. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. A new statewide political poll finds overwhelming support for cracking down on phones in schools. The latest Marquette Law School poll came out last Wednesday. It surveyed just under 900 voters earlier this month on things like the state and federal budgets and the 2026 governor's race. But it also asked about cell phone use in schools, and the response was clear.
We can be quick on this. Get rid of your kids' cell phones.
Marquette poll director Charles Franklin.
89% say not in classes.
72% of voters supported banning cell phones throughout the school day, including lunch and between classes. And it's a timely issue in Richland Center, where the local school board is weighing a change for phone use in the high school. Reporter Joanne Krulatz from WRCO in Richland Center.
This new language would restrict cell phone use during the day, whereas it is currently allowed in common areas before and after school, during passing times, and during lunch.
The school board listed a number of reasons for the switch to help students concentrate, reduce stress, and encourage healthy boundaries with technology, and for clear communication with families and to prevent misinformation during emergencies. That proposal heads back to the school board next month. The conversation happens as there's new national research on the link between screen time and mental well-being for youth. A study published last week in the medical journal JAMA followed over 4,009 and 10-year-olds over a four-year period. found that kids with high or increasing levels of addictive screen use, especially for social media or video games, were more likely to show signs of anxiety, depression, and serious mental health issues. Researchers caution that the study shows a link but doesn't prove causation. For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly cloudy with a chance of storms tonight. Lows around 68. Showers and storms possible on your Monday, otherwise partly sunny with a high near 77. Clearing out Monday night, a low in the mid-60s. Sunshine and 83 Tuesday, 86 for Wednesday.
It's 89 at our studios.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Take a look back at the weekend headlines with Pat Kreitlow, Trigby Olson, and State Senator Kelder Royce on what's happening in the Joint Finance Committee. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Civic Media Spotlight. To kick us off, we have the Maggie Dawn Show. In this show, Maggie breaks down a new lawsuit alleging Elon Musk attempted to buy influence in Wisconsin's elections. After that, Maggie talks to Jeff Mandel and Scott Thompson from Law Forward to explore how billionaire interference threatens to turn elections into auctions.
Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. And happy Wednesday afternoon to each and every one of you. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a stacked show for you all this afternoon. We're going to begin by talking about billionaire baby boys and their attempts to buy elections and what we should all be doing about that. We're then going to be joined at the bottom of this hour by an expert from the American Foreign Policy Council to help us understand what got us to this point with Iran and what may come next. I think that's going to be an absolutely critical discussion. Big props to my senior producer, Jamie, for lining up these guests this afternoon to cover all of the breaking news. And then at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, critically importantly, we are going to be joined by Indivar Duttagupta, or Indy. He's been on the show before. He is a Doris Duke Distinguished Visiting Fellow at Georgetown. He knows all about budget policy and especially what is going on with the Senate markups. We're going to talk about those potential impacts to Wisconsinites and the middle class. And then finally, in that 5 o'clock hour, we're also going to be joined in response to the breaking news this morning by Abigail Swetz, the executive director of Fair Wisconsin. This, of course, in reaction to the breaking news this morning that the Supreme Court doesn't understand that the Equal Protection Clause means equal. We're going to discuss that. Basically, the Supreme Court has endorsed trans care bans for minors, flying in the face of prior Supreme Court precedent that said sexual identity and questions of gender are indeed part of what is protected by the Equal Protection Clause. And therefore, when a government regulates in that space, those regulations must be subjected to the highest level of scrutiny to ensure that our most fundamental constitutional protections are actually given full breath here on Earth One. Apparently, the Supreme Court doesn't get that, at least six of them, that decision coming down on ideological lines. So we've got so much to talk with you about. Very pleased to have with me a frequent guest of this program and a new guest to the program. I'm joined to begin by Jeff Mandel, the executive director and head of Law Forward, as well as Scott Thompson, one of the lawyers there with Jeff, to talk about this groundbreaking lawsuit in response to, I don't know a weird new way to corrupt elections that billionaire baby boy Elon Musk came up with in our last election cycle here in Wisconsin. You'll remember this. He was giving away huge cardboard checks to people. I don't know, seemed to be something that we might be concerned about since paying people to vote has been made illegal since the Tammany Hall days. It's sort of pay to play at its most fundamental. They've filed a lawsuit that has garnered nationwide attention to stop this practice. Welcome back to the show, Jeff. Welcome to the show, Scott. Gentlemen, let's start with you, Jeff. Can you tell us exactly the claim that is being made in the lawsuit and why this is so important to keep Wisconsin elections fair?
Well, thanks, Maggie. We're glad to be here. This really is a case about free and fair elections and protecting those here in Wisconsin. And so what we have done on behalf of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and voters here in Wisconsin is brought a case asking the court to make clear that this conduct, this scheme, violates the election bribery statute here in Wisconsin, constitutes an illegal lottery under Wisconsin law, and that it was a civil conspiracy between Musk and two nonprofit organizations that he has significant control over, and also that this was a public nuisance, because free and fair elections are a public good for everyone in the state of Wisconsin, and this attempt to interfere is a nuisance. And so we are proceeding on behalf of the state of Wisconsin to fight back against that.
So let's just recap in case anybody missed this. So you got public nuisance. We've got a civil conspiracy. What was the first item on the tick list of wrongness about what Elon Musk did?
Well, we're asking the court for what's called a declaratory judgment. So the court is going to say, this is what the law means. And as part of that declaration, we're saying this constituted election bribery under our statute here in Wisconsin. Wisconsin statute 12.11, it's quite clear, and this is not okay.
Yeah, Wisconsin statute 12.11, listen, I've been asked to interpret it in my former life as the corp counsel for Milwaukee County, and basically it was like, yeah, you can't even offer free bus rides. You got to worry about handing out water to voters in line because of the aggressive nature with which the right polices, and I use that word intentionally, polices, and I think some would argue engages in voter intimidation when it comes to get out the vote efforts on the day of. I was like, if I can't hand somebody a bottle of water in line to vote when there's a long line, how is it possible that Elon Musk gets to hand them a big old cardboard check of $1 million? It just seems so absurd. Scott, let me ask you, have you heard from any conservatives that were in good faith also troubled by this kind of overt, loud and proud corruption?
I think that people of all stripes felt it in their gut. I think that people from across the aisle really sensed that this was different. And even if you look at the complaint, one of the recipients of the $1 million check went on video with America PAC and identified that he had previously done get out the vote work and that this was something different, that people hadn't done it like this before. And as our complaint really makes clear, we think that's because it's illegal. So really, again, that's why we brought the lawsuit. We think that people are right. We think that that sense of unfairness that had many people, like I said, across the aisle, sort of furrowing their brow and really feeling uncomfortable, we think those people are right and that the law backs that up.
This is from the Washington Post coverage. The lawsuit filed in state court by the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign says that Musk's actions create the, quote, risk that Wisconsin elections will become an open auction where votes go to the preferred candidates of the highest bidders, and the election outcome is determined by which candidate has a patron willing and able to pay the highest sum to Wisconsin voters. That's the piece, Scott, that you think regular people, when you look at that and you stand back, and it literally is like putting a for sale sign in the front of the metaphoric lawn of our house of democracy. And I struggle to understand, like, what's the long game for conservatives? Because then is it just an auction again, which candidate has which deeper pocketed guys lined up to hand out checks to would-be voters. It seems to smack of very, very partisan short-sightedness that it was okay because it was Elon. I mean, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't conservatives freak out when Zuckerbucks and other wealthy folks tried to give money to help literally just campaign workers? Election workers during the pandemic because so much more help was needed, and they screamed bloody murder then. Not a peep now, it seems. Strange, wouldn't you say?
It's not just that they screamed bloody murder, but we amended our state constitution to prohibit any private funding for election administration. And then, as you note, we have someone coming in and pouring tens of millions of dollars into this campaign. You know, what's so disturbing to me, Maggie, and it's in the complaint, is another article from the Washington Post, this one the day after our spring election, where North Carolina U.S. Senator Tom Tillis basically said that Elon Musk is a disruptor and that we all just need to get used to it. And what we should expect is that this will be the new normal going forward. And we should expect to see wealthy partisans on both sides standing on election stages, giving out those giant cardboard checks for $1 million. And that cannot become the new normal. That's why we're bringing this lawsuit, is we cannot go down that road. We are completely convinced it's already a violation of Wisconsin law. As Scott said, almost everyone we speak to agrees. Everyone is uncomfortable about this and says, that can't be right, can it? And so we are asking a court to step in and confirm what everyone already knows and make sure that this does not become the new normal here in Wisconsin or anywhere else.
Folks, if you're just joining us, this is the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm joined this half hour by Scott Thompson and Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. If you missed the news a few weeks back, they filed a lawsuit in partnership and with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign to stop the billionaire baby, otherwise known as Elon Musk, from handing out huge cardboard checks for $1 million or $100 to would-be voters for signing up. This just seems to me, Jeff, to be the natural evolution of the Supreme Court's complete failure to understand correctly on Earth One the corrupting influence of private money in political campaigns. Where do you think this lawsuit goes? Do you think it gets resolved by the Supreme Court of Wisconsin? Do you think that the U.S. Supreme Court would be open to this kind of what I'm just going to call out-and-out bribery?
I don't think anyone believes that even the U.S. Supreme Court, that has equated money with speech and has vacated so many reasonable restrictions on how we try to make sure we're having free, fair elections, I don't believe anyone thinks that they are going to say that Wisconsin's election bribery statute is somehow unconstitutional. So this case should begin and end here in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But this is, as you note, this is an evolution of what has happened. It is part of how our laws have devolved from Citizens United at the federal level to getting rid of tremendous amounts of campaign finance regulation here in the state while Governor Walker was in charge of the state. It's really unfortunate, and it's hard to believe that it was only a little bit more than a decade ago that Wisconsin was leading the way and had a Supreme Court election with full public financing and was a model and a light for the nation. And now look how different things are, and we need to bring this lawsuit.
And we have no one to thank for that except Wisconsin Republicans and Wisconsin former Republican Governor Scott Walker. We're going to continue this conversation with Scott Thompson and Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. On the other side, do you have questions for the gentleman or myself? 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Government corruption, live and well here in Wisconsin, but we're going to do something about it. No more billionaire babies handing out big old checks to swing elections in a corrupt, corrupt way. Stay tuned. It's the Civic Media Radio Network.
The
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The U.S. Supreme Court said in 2019 that partisan gerrymandering was fundamentally a political issue and left it to legislatures and state courts to decide. In South Carolina, a state Supreme Court case heard June 24th challenges the state constitutionality of partisan gerrymandering. At the heart of the case is this provision in the South Carolina state constitution. All elections shall be free and open, and every inhabitant of the state possessing the qualifications provided for in this constitution shall have an equal right to elect officers and be elected to fill public office. In another SCOTUS case, 2024's Alexander versus South Carolina NAACP, evidence showed state legislators repeatedly said they gerrymandered for partisan, not racial reasons when they moved 30,000 mostly black voters into Congressional District 2, leaving adjacent districts more white and conservative. Their admission of partisan gerrymandering is now being used against them. The League of Women Voters and ACLU argued that the admitted partisan gerrymandering, quote, violated voters' constitutional rights to free and open elections that are protected from all undue influence and where voters exercise equal influence over elections. The groups asked that the map be in compliance with the state constitution. We have links to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We welcome you back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Here we have Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. In this segment, Pat Kreitlow has some thoughts on a regime trying to rewrite historical records through its anti-DEI efforts and condoning federal government kidnappings of those they deem to be unpersons.
Parker's just finding us all kinds of new bumper music here from this new library that we get to dip into here.
Yeah, so, trying to keep you on your toes.
A Thursday morning vibe to it. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we will not have our usual Friday guests, like almost any of them, well, at least for the first 2 hours of the show, because everybody's got days off or they're traveling or have other conflicts. So at 6:30 tomorrow, instead of Kia Vakil from Courier Newsroom, we will be talking to Catherine Hempstead, the senior policy advisor at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, because they just put out a new report on the Trump big bloated budget boondoggle. And if that thing holds, Wisconsin hospitals are going to see a $3 billion reduction in spending over the next decade. And there will also be a $900 million increase in uncompensated care in Wisconsin hospitals. And there will be Wisconsin hospitals that cannot survive that. This current bill is detrimental to the health of rural health care in Wisconsin. And so we'll talk to Catherine Hempstead about that study tomorrow. And also, in place of Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze and Jim Santel, believe it or not, I found one woman who can replace them all. And that would be the one, the only, Joan Esposito, Chicago broadcasting legend, is going to join me for the 7 a.m. hour tomorrow. We'll have Dr. Kristen Lyerly here at 8:05 tomorrow and Mike Clemens with sports at 8:30. So a lot to cover, not your typical Friday tomorrow. Let's see, from on the text line. Oh, this would be Luke Mathers saying, I'm going to see, help me again here. It's Hozier, not Hozier, not Hozier.
Hozier.
Hozier. Should I go with the French?
Hozier.
Okay.
Like the word cozier.
Okay. Like Hozier. Hozier. All right.
Yeah.
So Luke is going to go see him, them. Is this a Bon Iver situation where it's a band name, but it's one person?
It's, yeah. Yeah. One person, but it's a band, yes.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to be clear on this. Grandpa wants to understand these things. So
I'm proud of you, Grandpa.
Let's take a look at what's happening at the state capitol here, because it is, well, it's interesting. Because you have a University of Wisconsin system that is already one of the least supported in the country in terms of public funding by legislatures around the country. And we know why that is. It's part of an ongoing Republican war against education. It started with a war on teachers back during Act 10. And now Republican lawmakers want to drag the UW down further. Instead of considering requests from Governor Tony Evers, and not just Governor Tony Evers, but hundreds upon hundreds of business leaders who asked Republican legislators to better support the UW. And the governor put in a request for more than $800 million in improved funding for the UW system. Now, Republicans were never going to approve $800 in additional funding for the UW system. They might have done, you know, half of that or a quarter of that. They're not even going to do that. They are actually talking about cutting the level of funding further for the UW system. And why is that? Well, see the comments from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. I mean, the only way to describe it is the perpetual whining about quote unquote political correctness. It has them, thank you. Oh, there he is now. It has them demanding changes in how ideas are discussed. I mean, I am no expert on Orwellian literature, but how much closer to, you know, the thought police can you get? A lot of this started with our colleague Todd Alba, who had been talking to folks in the Capitol, and got word of this possibility that rather than just a diminished level of increased support for the UW, they might actually cut the funding. And for a little while, Republicans were playing rather coy with it. And then, you know, Robin Voss, you can always count on him to eventually say, you know, the quiet parts out loud and say, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. Because according to him, the UW system had not done enough to ensure conservative students feel like they belong on campus. Well, let's look at that for a bit. What is the track record so far of the current conservative movement? Because again, the Orwellian parallels are striking. Because in 1984, you've got a Ministry of Truth that works to rewrite historical records. What do we see now with the so-called DEI attacks, which are nothing more than trying to erase the history of Black Americans and Native Americans and the LGBTQ community? So we have something close to a Ministry of Truth and a hostility in this legislature as well that wanted to cut the UW system last time around until the various DEI positions for diversity, equity, and inclusion, oh, the horror, were gutted. And of course, I mean, there's the official government actions taken against those who fall out of favor with the ruling party. They become unpersons in the 1984 novel, unpersons disappearing, with all evidence of their existence destroyed. Well, we are certainly seeing more of Trump using secret police to disappear people, including American citizens, until Big Brother is confident that they are who they say they are. I don't know, Winston. I'm just telling you to figure it out more quickly, that if the people who are trying to erase history and disappear people are now demanding changes in political thought, you might want to rethink whether these are the best people who would lead our University of Wisconsin system, our legislature, and our state. We will check in with Melissa Baldoff. Our climate check report yesterday turned much more toward some of the politics involved with her husband, Joseph Pecky, running for chair and much more. So that's all coming up yet on this edition of Mornings Powered by Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. The Midwest Farm Report is coming up next.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee, 540 WAUK.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
CBS News Brief. North Carolina Republican Senator Tom Tillis says he's not going to run for a third term. The announcement followed Tillis's decision to vote against advancing President Trump's budget bill to a final Senate vote. CBS's Nicole Killian.
It was very clear that Senator Tillis would likely face a stiff challenge, especially if he were to run for re-election.
Trump says the U.S. bombing of Iran's nuclear sites a week ago completely destroyed them. But on CBS's Face the Nation, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, said Iran's nuclear program survives.
The capacities they have are there. They can have, in a matter of months, I would say, a few cascades of centrifuges.
Europe is feeling triple-digit heat, says the BBC's Guy Hedgeco in Madrid.
Sweltering temperatures across Spain and Portugal as a mass of hot air pushes up from North Africa.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Another Brewers starting pitcher. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball. Back in April and May, the shorthanded Brewers went through 11 different starting pitchers. In the last week or so, they've unveiled the Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, and his 100-mile-an-hour fastball, making national headlines. Yesterday, the Brewers beat the Rockies 5-0. Right-hander Quinn Priester, allowing just one hit through seven scoreless innings, striking out 11 batters. GM Matt Arnold and the team scouts predicted Priester could become a starter. Pat Murphy says at first he had his doubts.
Matt Arnold in our front office predicting that this was the guy. And when I first saw him, I may remember him a little bit when I saw him in Colorado. And then when I saw him again and the next time he pitched, I'm like, ugh, this is a project. And then 11 more times, our pitching staff, pitching coaches, and the players on the staff embraced this guy and allowed him to grow.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Attention, avid readers, if there are still any left. You can never have enough psychological thrillers, as far as I'm concerned, and thanks to Amazon, there is a new one on the way based on a best-selling book. The streamer has purchased rights to Freda McFadden's The Tenant, which has been atop the New York Times bestseller chart for 7 weeks. The story follows Blake Porter, a marketing executive who loses his job and takes in a boarder to help make ends meet. You can imagine how that goes. Tough to find a good roommate, much less one who won't try to kill you. If you haven't been to Summerfest yet but have been meaning to go, you still have time. One more weekend, to be specific. The third and final weekend of one of the world's biggest music festivals kicks off again this Thursday, July 3rd. This upcoming weekend's music lineup includes Benson Boone, Fountains of Wayne, Social Distortion, John Oates, Without Hall, that doesn't seem right, Everclear, and The Lumineers. Hot fun in the summertime. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly cloudy with a chance of storms tonight. Lows around 68. Showers and storms possible on your Monday, otherwise partly sunny, with a high near 77. Clearing out Monday night, a low in the mid-60s. Sunshine and 83 Tuesday, 86 for Wednesday.
It's 89 at our studios.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, Jeff Mandel from Law Forward on suing Elon Musk in order to prevent backdoor bribery of voters by billionaires.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We push ahead to the Todd Alba Show on this week's Civic Media Spotlight. In this segment, Todd heard from his sources that the Joint Finance Committee was planning to announce an $87 million budget cut to the UW system. After this information was leaked, the JFC removed that item from today's agenda, likely due to calls from constituents. If your representatives are doing things against your interests, call their offices and tell them how you feel. It could really make a difference.
And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Allbaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Allbaugh, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board. It is 6 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Welcome in, everybody, here at the world headquarters of Civic Media, downtown Madison, where skies are partly cloudy right now. It is sultry. Going to be in the 80s in Madison for highs today. It is humid, I can attest. Walked over and got a little coffee this morning before the show or before we started getting going here, and it's already pretty darn hot. Normally, the studio is freezing, at least in the afternoon. I'm wearing a sweater. Now, today, the one day that we could use a little air conditioning.
It's pretty toasty.
It's pretty toasty. I feel like a Pop-Tart.
Yeah, me too. Just slowly cooking. And,
but have no fear. About 3 o'clock, the freezer will kick in.
I'm sure.
I'm pretty confident.
This is partly cloudy. I can barely walk outside and keep my eyes open. It's so bright.
It is pretty bright out. But I'm ready for summer weather. I'm not going to complain. I've been wanting some summer weather, so I am ready for it. Hopefully you're ready for a great show today. Going to be a great one indeed. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, we're going to be joined in studio by James Small. He is the Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. James Small going to be here to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart. I know that many Wisconsinites are concerned about this, is our EMS system, emergency management system, also our EMTs as well. Emergency services, because here's what's happened over the years, is we've seen more folks grow up and move away from rural areas, and then the population that's there is aging, and many of the people that are in charge of EMS, EMT services in rural Wisconsin have either died off or simply gotten too old to do the job. And a lot of younger folks don't feel called to do that. We're going to talk about what this means for Wisconsin, what this means for the legislature and the governor, what this means for all of us across the state of Wisconsin. And by the way, don't just think that this is only a rural, you got to go way out in the country. There are places like in Waukesha. You drive 10 miles and you're essentially in the country. Go to Green Bay. Areas where you can drive 10 miles and you're basically in the country. So this is an issue that is important to all of us, or should be, across the state of Wisconsin. And hour number two, little what's worse for you today. It's Tuesday. That means Taco Tuesday. What's worse today, Taco Bell or Taco John's?
I'll get dinner at the winner tonight.
Have you eaten at a Taco John's?
I've eaten at a Taco John's. It's been a minute, though.
Remind me, I have a story about Taco John's.
All right. We'll get to that.
We'll do a Taco John's story in hour number two. And also in the bottom of hour number two, very honored to be joined here at the desk in studio by Wisconsin State Representative Jody Emerson, a Democrat from the Eau Claire area. She's been on the show once before when we took the show on the road, the Trigvy and Reed Galen, up at Osseo at the Norske Nook, enjoyed some pie with Representative Emerson. She is the ranking member on the Assembly Committee for Universities and Colleges. She is going to be here because that's where we're going to start the show, where we're going to end the show, And that is on some major news happening just over a block away from where we're at in downtown Madison at the Wisconsin State Capitol. Now, last night, if you follow me on the socials, Facebook, Twitter, and the like, the follow sign is @AllBallShow on Twitter X, Twix, and the Todd Allball Show on Facebook. And I posted late last night some breaking news from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the flagship university here in Madison of the University of Wisconsin system. I know. It's now called the Universities of Wisconsin. Well, I still say the proper name is UW System, so that's what I like to refer to it as. We had, from our sources, gotten some breaking news. We passed it along last night, and it was this, that both mainly Democrats that I've talked to and staff in the Capitol, and also a couple of Republicans that will still talk to me, tangentially confirmed by saying, well, you're not too far off. And it was this devastating news coming out of the Capitol that the Joint Finance Committee, most powerful committee in the legislature, controlled by Republicans, made up of assembly folks and senators, only two Democrats on both sides, so controlled by Republicans, our old friend, and I say that sarcastically, State Senator Howard Markline is the co-chair on the Senate side. Of course, University of Wisconsin-Richland and Richland Center was closed a couple of years ago, and Howard Markline and his counterpart in the Assembly, who is also on the Joint Finance Committee, Mr. Kurtz, Tony Kurtz, said, oh, we don't have the power. There's nothing we can do. We can't get another $3 million in the state budget to save UW-Richland. I don't want to go down that road because that isn't specifically what this is about today. But the Joint Finance Committee was leaked last night. We had a hand in that, I'm proud to say, by getting the word out that when the Joint Finance Committee met today, I saw the agenda on the agenda for today, which they got underway about an hour ago, that was the budget of the University of Wisconsin system. Governor Evers had requested over $300 million in increases to the UW system. Because during the Walker years, the last time I worked in the Capitol, the UW system budget got gutted by Republicans in control. So Tony Evers was trying to restore some of that money. Remember, UW system led by President Jay Rothman, Board of Regents of the system are now controlled by appointees from Democratic Governor Tony Evers. And they've made slashes. They've closed half of the two-year campuses, six of the 12. They made other cuts throughout the UW system, gotten rid of largely of DEI, all at the behest and request primarily of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And they thought, well, if we play ball with these guys, if we make some of these big cuts, if we get rid of DEI, they'll be nice. They'll be nice. Remember the parable of the frog and the scorpion? There's a scorpion that wants to cross the river. There's a frog by the bank in the water. And the scorpion says, if you just give me a ride on your back across the other side, I'll be so indebted to you. And the frog says, yeah, but you're a scorpion. You could sting me and kill us both and we drowned. And the scorpion says, no, I'm not like that. I'm not like other scorpions. You can trust me. And finally convinces the frog to give him a ride. And halfway across the river, the scorpion stings the frog. The poison rushes into the frog and they both begin to drown. And the frog looks at the scorpion and says, you gave me your word. Why would you do this? And the scorpion simply replies, because that's who I am. That's my nature. UW System President Jay Rothman thought that by being a more amiable frog, that he could change the mind of Republicans in the state legislature, that he could make things different. But last night, the scorpion that is politically UW or the Republican legislature stung him. And it was announced and leaked out that the Joint Finance Committee today intended not only to use double negative, they're not going to approve Governor Evers' $300 million plus in increases. They're not even going to approve current funding levels that they intend today, or intended perhaps now, to cut $87 million from the university system budget. And in talking to Democratic sources at the Capitol, if that were to happen, and if Republicans in the legislature were to pass a bill that included $87 million in cuts to UW system, there is a feeling, at least among some Democrats on the Senate side, that they were then ready and prepared to call on Democratic Governor Tony Evers to not just line item, use his veto pen, one of the most liberal veto pens in the country. I don't mean that large liberal, but small L liberal, has a lot of purview. So the thought was that they would cut, or they wouldn't even be able to use the line item to get rid of these terrible cuts. And they may, keyword may, call on Democratic governor from their own party to veto the entire budget. Because remember, unlike the U.S. budget, if Wisconsin legislature and governor don't come to terms and don't pass a budget, government does not shut down. State government does not shut down. What happens is it continues on at the current level for the next 2 years. So if the governor were to veto the entire budget that included potentially $87 million in cuts to UW system, that would essentially be an $87 million gain for system. You understand where I went there? That by vetoing the budget that included, if it included $87 million in cuts, the governor was essentially saying, okay, UW, I know this is not what you want, but at least you get to continue at current levels for 2 more years. And so we put this out on our socials last night. I know that other people, after we did, amplified that. I know that our guest coming up in the second hour, Jody Emerson, was amplifying that last night in the Eau Claire area, was going through education circles. And today, about an hour before the show, it was announced that the Joint Finance Committee, guess what, decided to pull that from the agenda, at least so far. It's a very fluid situation because apparently, from what I'm told, a lot of Republican legislators on the Joint Finance Committee got a lot of calls from a lot of angry constituents saying you cannot kill the Wisconsin idea. And so far, it has been pulled. Now, also from what I'm told, that if they're to meet deadlines, the Joint Finance Committee has to do something with the UW budget by a week from today. So coming up in hour two at 3:30, really appreciate her fitting us into her very busy schedule. Representative Jody Emerson is going to be sitting right next to me and give us a live update. Perhaps we might actually see part of this motion by the Republicans and get a real number for you. Maybe we won't know anything more, but this is the last 12 hours, 12 to 15 hours is a great example that when the truth is disseminated and people react, that results can happen. So congratulations to each one of you out there who called your legislator this morning and put enough pressure on for them to at least temporarily reconsider this $87 million cut. Because I talked to my former boss last night, former state senator Dale Schultz, who once chaired the university committee on the Senate side, was one Senate majority leader, longtime Joint Finance Committee member. He agreed. There's no way that UW could absorb $87 million of cuts without most likely closing the remainder 6 2-year campuses across the state and very likely closing at least 1 4-year university in the state and or completely gutting colleges from within universities across the state. It would be devastating to the Wisconsin idea. What is the Wisconsin idea? One person asked me last night. And what are land-grant universities, and what's the connection to the Republican Party? We'll explain all of that on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's a busy Tuesday. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Allball Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us. Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Hey, it's Mike Rohn. If I have a choice, I like to do business with companies that actually stand for something. That's why I switch from Verizon to Pure Talk. No offense to Verizon, I'm sure they stand for something. I just don't know what it is. Pure Talk, on the other hand, is a veteran-owned company that supports our military in a big way, and I appreciate that. Yeah, I also appreciate unlimited talk and text and plenty of data for half the cost of the big guys, and I do like being on America's most dependable 5G network for just $20 a month. But what I really appreciate is no contract, no cancellation fees, and Pure Talk's commitment to handle all their customer service in this country. I saw it for myself. I went to Georgia, I got a tour of their headquarters, I met their CEO, and I talked to the same customer service folks that you'll talk to when you dial #250 and say keyword micro. Switch today and save 50% off your first month when you dial #250 and say keyword micro. Pure Talk. A wireless company that actually stands for something.
Here's to experiencing it all this summer in Wisconsin. Every deliciously cheesy, rockin', magical, fireworks-filled, festival-loving moment. There's Cheese Curd Fest in Ellsworth, Strawberry Fest in Cedarburg, Festival of the Arts in Stevens Point, and the Renaissance Fair in Bristol, Honor the Earth Pow Wow in Hayward, Mile of Music in Appleton, Venetian Fest, Rockfest, Summerfest. So many fests for your whole crew. Find them all at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
Look up cheese curds. You'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, did you guess? It takes 10 pounds of milk, which is a big gallon jug plus a little bit more, to make 1 pound of squeaky cheese curds. Call me your curd girl for this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matinee on air.
From articles that I have seen, if you are a bagel purist, you should not toast your bagel. I think nothing's better than a toasted bagel and a schmear.
Folks, can we have a moment of honesty? Do you really like bagels, or do you like the schmear that is transported by them? Get rid of the stigma. If I walk into this room eating cream cheese out of a tub with a spoon.
Why is that wrong?
Matinee on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We finish our first hour of the Civic Media Spotlight with Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. In this segment, Pete talks with David Patterson, writer and producer of Bridge to Terabithia. Patterson shares tales from his multifaceted career as a stuntman, playwright, and fire department volunteer. Hear about the thrills and spills of performing dangerous stunts, including a heart-stopping moment on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Welcome back. This is a Wednesday edition of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Great to have you with me. Our question of the night, it's National Splurge Day, folks. So what is in your shopping cart? We will catch up on texts in just a little while. Right now we have some more time with our pal, Dave Patterson, who is here. Dave wrote and produced the film, The Bridge to Terabithia, Dave. The is not in the title. I found that out.
No, that would have cost extra in the posters.
So. It's like the extra T. Yeah, you can't have that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So we were talking before the break about you finding out you have to make this long jump and teaching Robin Williams how to do it or coaching him somehow. How was that?
Basically, I was coaching him on how to step off the bridge, facsimile, and he had to do, I think, like a 4-foot drop onto a nice soft bag. Then they pulled everything away and put me up in the rafters, and I had to do a 40-foot version of that for the green screen, and then they would match it later with me in the East River. And it was unexpected for me and my stunt coordinator, and he walks up to me and basically looks at me. We didn't even speak. It's like, you're going to do it, right? Even though we both didn't expect this, you're going to do it, right? And not say a thing or complain or anything. And I'm like, yes. So I went ahead and did it. And it was, I hadn't done a large free fall since I was much younger. I told you I'd left the business to raise my boys and yeah. I had just gone back to business. And, but I made it and I didn't get hurt. And, but I had to land mostly on my stomach, chest, and face because of the way the fall was. And it was just on those gym mats that are about 18 inches thick because there wasn't enough room for anything more comfortable. And so, but wow. One of the great things was Robin insisted on watching the falls. And the first person that got me off the mat was him. And he was like, how's it, Chief? How are you doing? That looked like it hurt. I go, well, it didn't tickle, but I'm doing okay.
So and wait, you had to land man. On your stomach from 40 yes, feet. How yes. does that work? You in a cord where it kind of softens the blow a little bit?
No, there was no cord. That was the thing. It was a free fall, no cord or anything like that. It was just don't hurt yourself, basically. It was make sure as you fall, wow. don't hurt yourself. And so, and luckily I just did it in two takes. And I made it. And he went and yelled at one of the producers and got me an additional $500 for it because
Robin Williams.
Yes.
That's pretty yes. cool. Boy, that's, yeah. I don't use the word hero very often, Dave, but you're mine after hearing that story. So
I need to record that and share that with my wife a little later on, if I could. So.
What's the movie?
It's called The Angriest Man in Brooklyn. Okay. And then the other most dangerous stunt was we had to, me and Mila Kunis's stunt double, not me and Mila Kunis, we had to race a van down Ditmars Boulevard about 80 miles an hour, blowing all these different lights. The issue was they had only stopped six different intersections and the director was yelling us to go. We went through another four intersections without protection or the light stopped. We got pulled over by cops. They were going to cuff us when the director showed up with everyone. And because they saw us blow through some red lights and they're like, you could have killed someone. And wow. we're like, sorry. And so we didn't get arrested, but the cop did chew out everyone on the set because they should have taken another three or four lights and protected those. So
no kidding.
So that, I guess that was even more dangerous because we could have just plowed into a, you know,
yeah.
a bag lady or something like that. But
David Patterson is my guest. He is the writer, producer of The Bridge to Terabithia, Love Ludlow, The Great Gilly Hopkins. And he is a good pal. I have to tell you, I think cops are hilarious on movie sets. Like, you know, I love how they sort of, we were shooting, you've seen my film, The Godfather of Green Bay. Lance Barber and I were shooting. We're just going guerrilla style on the strip, driving this little Geo. The cameraman's in front of us in a pickup truck with the camera sandbagged down and he's filming us and we get pulled over. And I make up some story about how we're sorry, officer. We don't have the permits. We just needed to grab this one shot. I got to get Lance back to L.A. He's on Yes, Dear tomorrow, which was a sitcom back a time sure. ago. Have you seen the show? And the cop is looking at us like he knows I'm full of it. And he goes, yeah, I like that show. I was like, okay. So he just let us go. He was like the coolest guy in the world. But like they seem to want to help. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In New York City, the New York film office, basically, yeah. New York film office, they assign you cops if you're shooting in the city. And depending on the size of the crew, they assign many different cops. You don't even have to pay for it. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
It's not rent a cop. It's just give a cop.
Wow.
And so they give you cops and they're there just to make sure if some homeless guy comes up and starts, you know, throwing trash cans, you got a cop there to make sure that he goes away. And so, but the cops, yes, they are funny. They always make sure that there's enough donuts at the craft services. Right. Otherwise, there's going to be a complaint. But yeah, they are funny. Another interesting thing about civil servants is there's a lot of firemen that are stuntmen in New York City.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because it's one of the few jobs, civil servant jobs, where you can have another job because firemen work for 4 days and they're off for 3 days. They work for 3 days or off for right. 4 days. So they're allowed another job. So I've worked with a lot of New York City firemen who are also stuntmen. And they're just as crazy, if not more so, than regular stuntmen.
David Patterson is my guest. All right, here's what I want to do, Dave. I want to, when we do, we're going to do the news quick, as we call it, intermission. I want to ask you about Robin Williams, what you thought of him. And I want you to explain a little bit. I love when I meet people who have different backgrounds. You didn't just go to film school and you're making movies. You've done it all. You're also a volunteer fire department. You're the commissioner of the Parks Department. You've been a stuntman, a playwright. You just have a fascinating story. So we'll get into that when we come back. And obviously, I'll ask you about Bridge to Terabithia. And you need to tell us how your most recent film, The Girl Who Wore Freedom, did too. We'll do all of that after the news. Dave Patterson is here, ladies and gentlemen, on a Wednesday, a school night. Do you believe that? It's Peach Wamba, a Nightlight. We're coming right back on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Peach Wamba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Debate has now resumed in the Senate after a 16-hour delay caused by Democrats forcing the clerks of the Senate to read President Trump's budget bill in its entirety out loud. The Republican-controlled Senate's been working all weekend, racing to pass the bill and get it to the president to sign by July 4th. Idaho Republican Mike Crapo.
Only in Washington, D.C. is the refusal to raise your taxes an increase in the deficit. And we're not going to let that happen.
The bill contains about $3.8 trillion in tax cuts. Michigan's Gary Peters and other Senate Democrats are unanimous in opposition to the legislation.
This bill will blow up our national debt, kick millions of people off of their health care, and take food off of families' tables while cutting food assistance.
Any cut in food assistance will